and sense of security at Cigna.com.
Hi, I'm Lydia Bastianich, and you're listening to Food Fridays on the Leonard Lopate Show.
We tend to think of dirt in negative terms as something that gets on our clothes or we track into our house. But what you might not realize is that within that soil is a complex ecosystem, and the chemical exchanges that take place within it are essential to life as we know it. Deborah Kunz Garcia has directed a documentary called Symphony of the Soil, which opens today at the Quad Cinema in Manhattan and got a great review, by the way, in today's New York Times. I'm very pleased to welcome her back to our show. And also with us are Dr. Ignacio Chapella, Professor of Microbial Ecology at UC Berkeley, and Dr. Michael Hansen, Senior Staff Scientist with Consumers Union, which is the publisher of Consumer Reports. They both appear in the film. It's a pleasure to have you all here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Deborah, you're probably best known for your 2004 film, The Future of Food, which discussed genetically engineered crops and the corporate influences in our food supply. Did researching farming get you interested in thinking about soil?
Well, I did, yeah. After I made that, I thought I would do something in the same field, and so I decided to make a film on soil. But as I learned about soil, I realized that it's its own mysterious realm, and really agriculture is just one movement in the symphony of the soil.
Well, you were able also to tie in your other concerns, because genetically modified seeds and unsustainable farming practices are part of what you discuss in this film as well.
Yes. Well, that soil is alive, and if you put chemicals on it, which is most genetically engineered crops are engineered to have chemicals put on it or to create a chemical, you're actually damaging, you're deforming, if not killing, that organism, which then the processes that soil are supposed to perform for the planet don't happen, and then that becomes really problematic.
And Michael, that's sort of where you come in. You study GM foods, biotechnology, and the relationship to food safety?
That's correct.
Do you think that the subject of soil has gotten lost in all the debates over bioengineered farming?
Well, people have usually focused on the above ground portion, but the soil is really important because a healthy soil, a healthy ecosystem in the soil makes healthy plants, which are then less susceptible to disease. And part of these engineered plants that use herbicides, they kill off a lot of the beneficial organisms in the soil. The mycorrhizae, for example, are incredibly important.
Well, yesterday on this show, we talked with somebody about what's going on in Hawaii and the fact that Hawaii is now the major source of genetically modified seeds. And people are concerned about what's happening to the soil. It turned powdery and got red, looks like red dust now. Mm-hmm. Should we have expected that?
Well, yes. When you use a lot of, with these engineered seeds, they're using a lot of pesticides and fungicides and herbicides on them. And so those all have adverse effects on the soil. They help sort of make the soil less living. And a sick soil creates sick plants, which then need to be treated with more chemicals.
Ignacio, you conduct, is it cynecological research in soil?
Yeah. Yeah.
What is
interesting.
That?
That means...
Or is it cynecological?
Because cynecological.
Because my spell check wanted to change it to
gynecological. Either will do, right? Yeah, no, it is the approach to ecology where you try to understand the interactions and the relationships between many different species. Instead of just telling the story of one in an ecosystem, you try to tell the relationships between them.
Well, one of the other scientists in the film, Dr. Elaine Ingham, says that under a microscope, it's Times Square on New Year's Eve all the time in the soil.
Absolutely.
What does she mean?
You know, as a microbial ecologist, you get distorted in the way you look at the world, because you get trained to think about the world from the point of view of the little things that we don't see. And it turns out that more than 90% of both biomass as well as species numbers are the little things that we don't see. So I think this movie really does a great job of visualizing that world that is just really thriving and yet is invisible. We step on it and we don't really realize it.
And you say in the film that it's rare to have a planet that has soil. We can tell that through the Hubble telescope?
We can tell that because we've been trying to even reproduce the bare-bone conditions that would lead to the beginning of what this planet is like today, this green planet. And we know that it is a unique and really, really rare, almost coincidence, you could say, that this exists in the universe altogether.
You travel to three different places to show the elements of soil, a glacial river where minerals are abundant, a beach where we have sand, and a hillside where there's biological material. Can you explain how each of these individual elements become soil? Did they all become the same soil, or did they become different kinds of soil?
Well, that's a really important point. The fact that each soil really has a personality, that each soil is a different thing, a different organism, if you will, that has as much of a personality, as much of a history and a destiny as individual species or organisms in an ecosystem.
Is that why the French talk about the importance of what they call terroir?
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Michael, you say that 70 to 80% of the organisms in soil have not even been identified.
Yeah, that's probably an underestimate, because what they do when they look at these gills of things is you can look at a gram of a soil and they can see that there's hundreds of thousands of different kinds of DNA in there. And so they know there's all these species, and most of them have not been fully identified. So they're now being able to talk about the total numbers, but the vast majority have just never been looked at.
Well, why can't we identify them? Don't you just stick the soil under a microscope?
Well, you have to be able, for the organisms, you have to separate them, and then you have to be able to culture them, because you have to make enough of them to be able to identify them, to look at the characteristics of each one and look at what its DNA is. And so many of these things, you can't culture them. So how do you then study them? Because you need to know their life cycle, because when you name a new species, you not only put a name on it, but you have a life cycle and everything. And if you can't culture it,
you don't know whether they live for 10 seconds or 100 million years.
Right.
Many of the scientists in the film call prairie soil the most productive. Why is that?
Well, I think that's because that's a perennial system, and if you see it, the prairie grasses have these really deep, deep roots, and those roots are actually working with the soil. And it's because the Midwest in the U.S., because of the way the glaciers worked here in Europe, mountain chains are east-west. Here they're north-south. So we have the best topsoil in the world, 2 feet. Most of that's gone now, but
we've kind of destroyed it by overfarming it.
Yes,
and now, because we don't have the prairie grasses with deep roots in the soil, we've kind of taken away something that the soil relies on.
Yes, by moving it to these systems, corn and soybeans. When there's no crops, the wind just takes the dust. That's what the Dust Bowl was about. And prairies, you didn't have that problem. It was getting rid of the buffalo and all that. That's why people are trying to bring some of the prairies back.
Deborah, you got to travel to some pretty beautiful places for this film, and you have some gorgeous shots. Is the soil in Hawaii the same as the soil in Egypt or even here in
New York? Well, no, they're very, very different. Soil in Hawaii is volcanic soil. And what's really interesting about studying soil in Hawaii is you have, because of the volcanoes are still active, you have soil that's 50 years old and you have soil that's 5 million years old. So I was developing this idea that soil has a birth and has a life cycle and there's different characteristics. And so it's kind of
fascinating. And how can they date it to 5 million years old?
I guess they do carbon testing. But you can see it, because old soil has a lot more clay in it, because that's one of the effects of long-time weathering of soil. And also it's red, has lots of oxides in it. So you can, even before you test it, you can kind of sense, oh, this is old soil. I mean, I'm sort of able to see that more than I could a few years ago.
I'm going to have you come to my backyard and tell me whether I have old soil or new soil. Ignacio, how important are the things that live within the soil to the various kinds of soil there are? The ones that we're most aware of course, are bacteria, worms, also plant roots.
Well, you know, there are people who believe that we can grow and have everything we need to eat on sterile sand, for example, or on plastic, styrofoam, hydroponics. There's a whole industry of working your food without soil, and it works.
Except that many people will tell you that they think hydroponic vegetables just don't have the same full flavor that vegetables that are grown in soil.
Well, that's if true. You can taste anything, you will know that. That is part of the problem. That, as you were saying, as the French and many people around the world have always known, that you taste the place, you taste the soil. And that difference, the diversity and the richness of our food, really comes from the complexity that is expressed in the plant, but comes from the diversity of the soil.
Well, there's a lot of talk in the film about the conventional soil used in large-scale farming. What's the difference between that dirt and dirt I might find anywhere else?
Well, that is the problem, that between the hydroponics and the unbroken soil that has been developing for millions of years, there is a whole range of different conditions that we have developed for with our agriculture that more or less preserve the diversity, the biological diversity of the subsoil. And so it's difficult for someone who doesn't have the training and doesn't have the culture to really recognize it's a slippery slope, that you can end up with incredibly cheap and bad food without realizing what you've lost, precisely because it's happening in the dark and in the invisible.
But if I go to a gardening center and I buy soil, Michael, what am I buying there?
Well, you have to look, because sometimes what some of that soil could be what are called biosolids, which is basically sewage sludge. And the problematic thing about that is they'll often sell it and label it as organic.
Yeah.
And
Well, it is organic.
Well, right.
Well, maybe not. There's a lot of chemicals.
There's a lot of chemicals and other things. So in the chemical sense, it's organic. But most people, when they buy that, they think that that would be fine. They can put it in their gardens and everything. And that stuff can contain triclosan, arsenic, heavy metals, lots of compounds. In fact, we've actually been fighting with the government saying that they need to reduce the use of these biosolids and at least label them properly.
Well, many people are buying that soil to put in pots so that they don't use the soil that they already have in their gardens, because you don't want to grow vegetables in that. But you're saying that we may be growing our vegetables in soil that's not much better than the
stuff
actually, that we find
when
naturally
you look
here?
At the level of arsenic they allow in, and this was decided back in 92 before we knew how toxic arsenic was, the level of arsenic they allow in biosolids, I wouldn't want to plant any foods and that kind of material, because arsenic is far more toxic than we thought. So that's just one indication.
There's also the pharmaceuticals.
Yes, there's all the pharmaceutical drugs and triclosan and endocrine-disrupting compounds. Yes, the PDBEs, the flame retardants you find in sewage sludge.
So even if you don't want to take the drugs, you're eating them
without even realizing it.
Many of the scientists in the film say that our agricultural system would be improved if the soil we use to grow specific crops like strawberries were more closely mimic the way they grow in the wild. Is it hard to do that?
There is actually a movement, farming in the wild, which is pretty interesting, they're doing in California. But the idea is that wherever that plant grows in nature, you want to grow it in a system as closely matched to that as you can, because then you don't need to manipulate the soil and add amendments. And
because
things like
the strawberries are already developed in that kind of soil. That's their natural environment.
Yeah, well, it's at home there. Yeah.
It's sort of interesting that you mentioned strawberries, because strawberries is the one crop, when they grow it in California, they have to fumigate the soil. It used to be with methyl bromide, which is highly toxic. Now they use something else. They functionally have to sterilize the soil. So that's one of the worst examples.
And is that why California, those Driscoll strawberries have pretty much no taste?
Well, they do have organic strawberries, and that's not grown that way. So.
Now,
right, but some of the big ones, those big strawberries, the reason they don't have taste is they're octoploids, and those larger ones, the cells just get bigger, so they're not as flavorful as the small ones.
One of the farmers in the film argues that farmers should leave the weeds around the crop, saying that it will ultimately help the crops grow. Why? Don't weeds take over and crowd out the crop?
There's a really good example of the Rodale Institute, where you're shown a field that has these weeds in between the corn rows, and we are told how those fields actually yield even more. If you choose the right mix of species, you end up having to use less chemicals, having to use less inputs, fewer inputs, and actually getting a higher yield. You also get diversity, because if you choose, for example, in the case of corn, you choose the three sisters, and then you get a crop of beans, you get a crop of corn, you get your squash and so on, the typical thing of this time of year here in the U.S., right? The Thanksgiving kind of meal. Out of the same surface area with fewer inputs. You get beneficial insects that come with the other plants that will keep the pests down. So you will end up in the end with a more flavorful and more nutritious and more interesting kind of food out of your management of diversity instead of your management of simplicity.
Now, Deborah, you not only spoke to scientists like Dr. Chappella and Dr. Hansen, but also chefs. You went to Blue Hill at Stone Barns where Chef Dan Barber has a lot to say about not only what he grows, but how he grows it.
Yeah, he's really into this idea of flavor is created by the richness and the minerals in the soil. And, of course, they grow a lot of their own the food there that they use in the restaurant. And they actually have different kinds of compost that they make up that's good for different kinds of crops. So he's really into it. And it's wonderful because the food certainly is delicious. So the proof's in the tasting.
And you also visited several places that make soil. Can you make soil?
Well, you can build soil. You can build soil by feeding the soil. If you expect nature to do it, it will take quite a long time, millions of years. But you can feed the soil with compost, and you can take cover crops and turn those back into the soil. There's a whole variety of things you can do that are really healthy for that organism.
Well, does compost with worms make soil, or does it make something that just enriches the soil that's there?
Well, it becomes part of the organism, that soil. So it all comes together. I mean, you can't, after I made this film, I realized if I held a piece of soil in my hand and say, this is soil, it would be like holding a piece of seawater in your hand and say, this is the ocean. Mm. It is so complex. But, yeah, it's all just a lot going on there.
So let me ask the two scientists before you have to go, because we pretty much run out of time. Are you concerned by the way things are progressing? Most of the scientists in your field would like to see things change, but they're bucking up against industry, they're bucking up against government. Is this kind of like what's happening with climate change, where 98% of all scientists say there's climate change, but the people who make policy say, well, there is no such thing as climate change?
Well, there are people out there who don't even talk about the subject. But the reality is that you choose which peak you're going to look at. Where we've gone through peak oil, maybe. Some people want to discuss with it. But it's very likely that we have gone through peak soil. And where you can reduce energy consumption and you can have more efficient ways of using energy, the soil you really, really require to grow your food. So it might be one of the things that really brings us down.
Well, farmers used to rotate their crops, when the soil was resting, they would grow things in it that would put good stuff back into the soil. Right. We don't do that anymore.
And most of the practices of industrial agriculture today, they end up eroding the soil at much faster rates than you can really recover them.
Yeah, and I would actually just point out, just like there was an international panel on climate change, there was the same thing. It was called the IAASTD, the International Agricultural Assessment of the Role of Science and Technology in Agriculture. It was a 4 or 5 year process. 400 scientists from all around the world, NGOs, all got involved. The answer that they came up with was, the future of agriculture is not technology, it's not genetic engineering, it's not nanotechnology, it's actually agroecological approaches, looking at gender issues and changing some of these distortions in trade we see. So that's the answer, not the industrialized models that we see here in the U.S. The Food and Agriculture Organization has reformed their Committee on Food Security, putting farmers at the forefront. That's wonderful. The U.S. is sort of in the rear guard, of course, but...
My great thanks to Dr. Michael Hansen, Senior Staff Scientist with Consumers Union, publisher of Consumer Report, Dr. Ignacio Chappella, Professor of Microbial Ecology at UC Berkeley, and Deborah Coons-Garcia, who is the director of a film called Symphony of the Soil that opens today at the Quad Cinema in Greenwich Village in Manhattan. And I thank you all so much for being on our show.
Thank you.
Thank you.